Welcome to Where Did the Road Go? Be sure to check us out online at www.wheredidtheroadgo.com. Now enjoy this edition of the Midweek Podcast.
Welcome to this Midweek Podcast here on Where Did the Road Go? And I wanted to get this up as quick as possible. This relates to David Politis' new documentary for Missing 411, the movie. And we're going to be talking about the Kickstarter and how you can contribute and some of the prizes. And as I say during this interview, I feel like this is one of the most important topics we cover on this show. Something is clearly happening. It is utterly traumatic and just kind of dark. And the advantage of this documentary is it should expose this to more people. And the more people who know about this, the more likely we are to eventually figure out what's going on. Plus, as people are aware of what's happening, hopefully we can stop more of these cases from occurring. Also, I briefly bring up some articles by Patrick Harper, who had sent me some pieces he had written for 14 Times. Because 14 Times owns the copyright, I can't put them on WhereDidTheRoadGo.com. However, Patrick has said if anyone would like to read his article, Panic in the Woods, to drop him an email and get in touch with him. And we will be having Patrick on to discuss a bunch of different stuff in a roundtable on a midweek podcast sometime very soon. But meanwhile, if you'd like to shoot him an email and ask him very nicely for his Panic in the Woods article, you can find him at harper.org, harpur.org/patrick.htm. Or just go to harper.org and click on Patrick Harper. And he's a very nice guy, and he is willing to send you that article if it's something you'd like to read. He also has a new book coming out that we will have him on for as well. But that will be in the future. For now, we're going to be concentrating on David Politis and his son Benjamin, who is involved in this documentary as well. And we're going to be talking to both of them here, and they're going to be telling us about it. As well, they're going to be telling us some really weird stories that happened just in the bit that they shot. So, if you can't donate to the Kickstarter, at least share it, get it out there, let people know what's going on, make sure they meet their goals, because they're almost there, and they really need to get up there and get this made. So, without any further ado, here is Benjamin and David Politis talking about Missing 411, the movie. So I am joined here with Benjamin Politis and David Politis. And welcome back to the show, David.
Hey, thanks a lot, Soraya. Pleasure to be here.
And you guys are working on Missing 411, the movie.
Yes, we are. It's an exciting project. We've been working on it for many months and starting to come around.
Now, last time you were on back in, I think, December, you had said something about some big projects coming up. I assume this was one of them.
Absolutely, it is.
All right. And Ben, what's your involvement here?
So right now I'm working in a director and a producer capacity for Missing 411, the movie. You know, we had a bunch of people approach my father, Dave, to do some sort of visual medium for his book series. And, you know, some people had good ideas, some didn't, but the main fact that we wanted to do was to keep the story's integrity strong. And the only way to do that in our minds were to do it ourselves. So, you know, after contemplating whether or not I wanted to do it, I kind of met with some of the victims and their families, and I just said, you know, this is ridiculous. We have to do this, and this story needs to get out there. And we got together a small group of very dedicated and talented filmmakers, and we went out and we filmed that trailer, and we got about one third of the footage done for the entire documentary, and that's why we threw it up on Kickstarter, so that we could get the funding to attract more talent to the project, and so that we could finish this thing.
Okay, well, what's your background? Do you have a background in film?
You know what, my background in film is relatively recent. I just graduated college at Miami University, where I played Division I ice hockey for 4 years, and I was fortunate enough to earn Scholar Athlete of the Year for my graduating class. Nice. And I'm also set to attend USC's Film and Television Production School next year. So I figured this would be a great project for me in the meantime. And, you know, I'm not claiming to do this by myself. Like I said, we have a 5-time Emmy award-winning videographer on board who's shooting it for us. And we were able to attract the best talent because the stories are so compelling.
Well, looking at the trailer is available on your Kickstarter page, all you have to do is go to Kickstarter and put in Missing 411. It's the first thing that comes up. And the trailer there is, I mean, it looks beautiful. It looks just amazing, and it's only, what, 3 minutes long?
Right.
And you got, talk about some of the people you've already filmed with here.
Right, so we filmed a couple victims, family members that, you know, one of the people on there, Alan Atadero, who's the first guy to come up and talk on the trailer, his son went missing in the Comanche Peak Wilderness area in northern Colorado in 1999. And him and my father, Dave, have grown very close because Alan reached out to Dave a few years ago because he had read what my dad had written about his son. And Alan has been super helpful in just getting us our information. And there are things in our documentary that haven't been covered in any other things that pertain to some of these missing people. And another family is the Stelling family, who went missing, or their Deneen Stelling, her husband went missing out of Mesa Verde National Park in 2013. And we actually went with them to the spot where Dale was last seen, Dale being the husband, and interviewed them there. And now, I mean, these are the hardest interviews I've ever been a part of. I know, I'm guessing my dad has ever been a part of. And I mean, they're just heart-wrenching to hear. And I think the hardest part is that they don't have any closure whatsoever.
Right, right. Okay, so what about, you also have on, who's the survivor guy?
Right, we have Les Stroud, who's, you know, there's a few people doing survival shows on cable networks, and we reached out to Les Stroud because he's one of the more legit guys. He films everything on his own. He's out in the wild. I think he recently got in a Jeep accident, but he's doing things the right way out there. And he kind of started a dialogue with us about this, and he wanted to see if he could make some of the trips that these missing people do in the same time that they supposedly, you know, traveled vast distances. And he said he couldn't do it. And he's a trained survivalist. He's been doing this for, you know, 30 plus years. And it just baffles his mind. So he was super intrigued about this. And then there's actually somebody who didn't make an appearance in the trailer, and we're kind of keeping it under wraps. But we were able to get an interview with a cabinet member who was actually appointed by President Obama. And he goes on video to explain kind of what, you know, we grilled him and we asked him what's going on. And he said some pretty interesting things. And I'm very excited for people to see this. But we can only show it if we get funded. So I think that right there is probably worth the price of admission, is just seeing what this guy has to say.
And you also had George Knapp on there making some comments.
Mm-hmm. George Knapp, he's been a big advocate of my dad's books, and I mean, it just baffles his mind as well. That's the
right.
That's the common thread, I think, throughout all of this, is that it's so intriguing.
And it looked like you had someone from the National Park Service who didn't want to really say too much on there.
Yeah, we've interviewed 3 National Park employees so far. Hopefully we're going to get more. We've already had people reaching out to us who want to talk more about it. And I think that that's the biggest thing, is if any of your listeners are former park employees or current park employees or worked in the administration and they know anything, get in contact with us. We'd love to hear from you. You know, we need to get our information just as much as anybody else. So, because we're trying to, you know, shed light on this thing and show as accurate a picture as possible.
Now, David, in the most ideal situation, what do you hope to achieve with the documentary?
Well, there's some people out there that don't like to read books, and this is just another medium to get the message out that there is something unusual, something that's mind-blowing once you get into it, that people are disappearing, and there aren't any easy answers to it, and the numbers are sometimes overwhelming. I put something on my Facebook page last night, and I think already there's 120 different responses, and it's the people that have disappeared this past summer that fit the profile we established 5 years ago, and none of these people have been found.
Now, I assume that in this documentary, you're more covering what's happened, not so much trying to explain it still?
Yeah, that's correct. I think you need to understand that there are real people with real families that feel that they've been abandoned. And at that front end, when somebody goes missing, there's a lot of press, there's a big effort. Then all of a sudden, you reach the 7th or 10th day, nobody wants to talk about it anymore. But yet somebody's missing out there. And there is a common thread. There's several common threads amongst this. And rather than leap to what it might be, I think it's more important to figure out what it really is. And as I've stated on your show before, I mean, I've had probably a dozen lengthy emails about people thinking that they know what it is, and they're positive they know what it is. But the reality is, as time goes on and we learn more and more and more, you're going to see that this paradigm shifts, and it may be much more complex than what people originally thought 4 or 5 years ago.
Okay. All right. And do you think that the National Park Service and stuff are going to pay attention if this gets made?
Ben, why don't you tell them about the petition?
So there is a lady who lives in the Colorado area. She's a professor, and she started a petition. And I think the petition needs 10,000 signatures. It's about halfway there to get the National Park Service to keep a list of missing people in their parks. If that petition hits 10,000 signatures, a bill will be proposed and will hopefully hit the floor, of the congressional floor. And then this bill will be put in front of politicians so that hopefully there will be a bill. But I think that it might be a little naive to think that just getting the petition signed is enough. We will probably need more, and there needs to be widespread consensus as to, you know, what the problem is and what maybe a possible solution, or at least some sort of list or some sort of a collective, intelligence on this whole topic. And I think that's where the documentary may come in, is that, if Congress just, it's easy to slough off a petition. It's hard to ignore a documentary that maybe hits national distribution.
And you're going to be putting this through some film festivals and such.
Right. And that's where, the Kickstarter money comes in. The more we raise, the more film festivals we'll be able to submit to. I think a lot of people don't understand how expensive it is to just get your film in front of people who can then make decisions about it. And but I have a lot of faith in all the followers of the books, and I think we're going to get it done. I think that we're going to probably reach beyond our goal so that we can do things that will make sure that this film sees as broad an audience as possible.
And you are getting close to your goal, which you need to reach in order for Kickstarter to give you the money. For anyone listening, Sunday, October or August 16th is the final day. That's when it ends. Mm-hmm. And that's at the morning of August 16th at that.
Right.
So if people are going to pledge, they should go immediately. And you have some great rewards here. Even for $5, you get updates and stuff. For $20, you end up with a T-shirt.
Mm-hmm.
$30, you're looking at, the HD digital download of this.
Totally.
Which you're filming in 4K, right?
Right. It was important to us to show these areas and these people as accurately as possible. And the whole industry is going towards this 4K resolution. You see the 4K televisions. I think Netflix is going 4K. I think they're already there. And so it was important to us to film in this high resolution. We took a little bit of a hit financially on the front end, but it wasn't a big deal to us because we knew that we wanted to give this thing the best chance of succeeding, and our best shot was by filming it in this super high resolution format.
Right. And it goes, you have quite a lot of rewards here listed. People should check them out. And you go all the way up to, what, $10,000?
That's right, yeah.
Yeah, which is obviously a limited one.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for that one you get, there's only, I think, one of these in the world, and it's an original print of Missing 411. So the first book to ever come off the press is what you would get. And I think if the books have already garnered pretty widespread acclaim, but if this documentary hits a home run, I think the savvy investor who wants to invest in one of those original prints is gonna do pretty well for themselves.
True. And I think the books, as popular as they seem to be in the sort of fringe realm, they haven't really hit the mainstream yet. And maybe this documentary will open that up.
Right. That's what we're really hoping for. You know, it's it is right, like you said, it's right on the fringe of this kind of, you know, peripheral research and the mainstream media. And I think that it's going to take one brave journalist to kind of come forward and say, look, this is a serious topic. It needs to be taken seriously. And maybe it's going to take the documentary to go out for people to kind of be like, oh, wow, yeah, you know, this is serious. Maybe it can happen before that. And we're hoping that if anybody's listening to this who, you know, get in contact with us, and maybe you have a connection with mainstream media, or maybe you yourself are a journalist at a newspaper. We've done a lot of local shows, and we've talked to a lot of local journalism sources, but we have never gotten to like a New York Times, a Wall Street Journal, that kind of level. And we're looking for that. We're hoping that somebody sees this as what it is.
You know, one thing that Les Stroud says in the trailer is that this is a series of facts, and there's no hypothesis here. It's just facts. And I think the facts become overwhelming once you start reading book after book and you see the parallels within the cases. And in fact, one of these guys on our show said, you know, this ought to be on Vice, the TV show. And Ben's tried to make inroads there. Can't get a hold of the right people, but that would be a perfect venue for it to come out at.
Are the books still selling well?
Oh, very, very well.
Okay. It seems like you have just set this topic on fire, honestly. And I think it's really one of the most important topics as far as unexplained mysteries go, because it is ongoing and it affects so many people. It's not, hey, I saw something weird, what is it? I mean, and whereas that's interesting and important in its own realm, this is something that is very dark in the fact that so many, especially children, keep going missing, and it has such a traumatic effect on so many people. I mean, this work is, it needs to be out there so people understand what's going on, or at least have an idea that it's happening.
No, totally. And to your point, I think that the topic is reaching a critical mass, and it's got to go one area, because, you know, everybody in, I guess you would call it fringe science, or, you know, has accepted this as, okay, it's true. And it's not like Dave, my dad, is making erroneous claims. He's just presenting evidence. And then people Right. come to their conclusions, you know, given my dad's background or what they think, you know, and there's a lot of conjecture out there, and there's a lot of hypothesizing whether that's warranted or not. And the thing that, you know, it was really a brilliant strategy early on by my dad to not say what he thinks is going on. You know, sure, we all brainstorm in private and we think of certain scenarios, but none of them really hold weight or water. And I think that that's something that people need to understand, is that we're not claiming it's anything. We're just trying to present evidence, and then you as the viewer or the reader can decide what you think is going on. Now, with the documentary, we are allowing the people who we interview to speculate what they think is going on. So that's going to be an interesting element of the film, is to hear what other people have to say about it.
And it seems that the more of these cases that pop up, the harder it is to fit into any one narrative. I mean, early on, if you look at like a handful of cases, you say, well, it could be this, it could be this. But as this project has progressed, I mean, you're looking, you say, well, what if it's this? Well, all these pieces fit, but not this one.
Mm-hmm.
And it, you see this a lot with, especially in UFO cases, where you say, well, maybe it's this, but wait, this piece doesn't fit into that narrative at all. And that seems to be what's happening here, where there's just no easy answer where it's like, okay, well, it's this, and, you know, these couple of things are questionable, and we can leave them off to the side. Nothing really fits this nicely and neatly.
No, you're absolutely right. In a lot of cases, you're trying to fit a square peg into a round hole, right? And we live in a confusing time in a complex era, and I know a lot of people like to oversimplify things and to try to stamp it as, oh, it's definitely this or it's definitely this. And I think it's our job, or my job as a filmmaker, my dad's job as an unbiased author, to present it without trying to make a personal spin on the topic. And, yeah. You know, it's hard because I've heard my dad get interviewed and he gets a lot of pressure. And I think it's unfair a lot of times that people try to pressure him into saying, okay, what do you think it is? Because it wouldn't be fair for the audience to get that response, because there simply isn't enough evidence to fully explain what's going on. And until that happens, until somebody, you know, we get somebody to speak out or some sort of whistleblower, I don't know if we'll be able to get that. And that's maybe where some of the stuff in the documentary will shed some light on that. Because we're pursuing some very interesting avenues, but I mean, the best we can do is to kind of just to hold up a lens to reality as best we can.
And again, people can find this and donate to it on Kickstarter. If you go to Kickstarter.com, just look up "Missing 411," and it's the only thing that'll come up. And how can people contact you guys?
So on our Kickstarter page, If you scroll down, there's a big button that says contact us, and you can send us a message through our website, or you can send us a message through Kickstarter itself, or a third option is to send us a message through the Missing 411 Facebook page, Missing 411 the movie Facebook page. Also, you can contact my dad. He always puts an email address on his books that you can contact him through. So there's several different avenues, all work and all we answer, so whichever one you feel comfortable with.
Okay. There are a couple things here that I've come across recently that, David, I wanted to kind of get your thoughts on. One of them, last week my guest was Joshua Cutchin, who's written a book called A Trojan Feast, and one of the things he does is he takes apart food and drink offerings in different paranormal encounters. And while we were talking, he mentioned the fact that berries play such a large part in these missing 411 encounters, as well as tales of like little people and stuff living in boulders and boulder fields, which is another common aspect of a lot of these cases.
Yeah, I've written about that and fairies and mythology, and it all centers around, you know, the rural areas. Sometimes it's berries, sometimes it's boulder fields, sometimes it's water. No, there's several common threads there that if you look back into mythology, it's there hundreds of years ago. And in my books, I go back to talking about a case in 1752 that happened. So, yeah, it's been around a long, long time.
And it seems like whatever, I mean, because you get the stories of fairies abducting people in certain locations. I'm not sure if you're familiar with Demonic Reality by Patrick Harper.
I've heard of it.
Okay. I had come across the fact that he had written a column for, or not a column, but an article for 14 Times? Yeah. Back in the early 90s called Panic in the Woods. And he was not aware of your information. I wrote him to get a copy of it. And it talks about something you talk about in your books, that eerie silence that sometimes comes across when you're out in the woods.
Yes.
You know, and how some people literally will just panic when that happens and start running. And so I had him listen to your stuff, and he also was finding that connection to folklore, which is something he's very involved in, very, very strong, that these disappearances and the folklore and the ancient tales are so, connect so tightly with this. And one of the things he had sent me is this short little paragraph here about a 19-year-old girl who had not returned for supper when she had just got off to visit a neighbor, and search parties were dispatched. It says they looked everywhere for her until about midnight. The girl turned up at the house and collapsed in tears. She had made a detour, she explained, to climb Lys Ard, the famous fairy fort. She climbed the slope of the hill around which the bank and ditch of the fort ran and walked through the beechwood on the top. However, when she tried to leave, walking toward a gap in the bank, she felt a queer kind of jerk, a muscular jerk inside of her rather than from the outside. And before she realized what had happened, she had found herself walking quickly in the opposite direction. When she turned and headed once again for the gap, the same thing happened. Whatever way she tried to get out, she felt as if there was an invisible barrier preventing her. As darkness fell, she became increasingly desperate, afraid to stop following the encircling barrier around the hill. She even saw a search party and could hear them calling out for her, but they neither saw her nor heard her cries. At last, all of a sudden, the barrier seems to lift, and terrified and exhausted, she made her way home.
Very scary.
And, I mean, that kind of mimics, again, some of what happens in these cases that you're following, where people find themselves in places they can't explain. And there was the one, and I think it might be the one you're dealing with on this documentary, where they could hear the guy yelling for help, but no one could find him.
Well, no, not on this. There was something, I mean, there's been a lot of unusual things that have happened to the film crew and Ben and I while we've been out. But one of the more unusual ones happened when we were at Mesa Verde Park. Ben, you want to talk to him about that?
Well, I mean, there have been, like my dad said, very weird things that have happened to us. I think that, so when we were at Mesa Verde, the sun of Dale Stelling, he was with us, and he had always wanted to bury his father under the oak tree back home, and he never got a chance to do that, and it really tore him up, because they thought, you know, they were going to find Dale, and, you know, they could bring him home and bury him under the oak tree. And so he wasn't able to bring his dad to the oak tree, so he brought a piece of the oak tree to his dad, and he had cut out a slice of the oak tree and, you know, etched his dad's initials into it and then lacquered it. And it was very beautiful. It was a piece of artwork. And he took a moment and walked down the trail. And he said, you know, can we turn the cameras off? So we turned the cameras off. And he went down kind of a little off the trail. And he kind of put it there. And we all had a moment where we were very quiet. And I think it was Dave, it was my dad who said, well, listen to that. And I go, listen to what? There's nothing. And it was very odd, because the entire time we were there, there were birds, there was wind, there was the rustling of trees and bushes. But for that small amount of time, it was probably 5 minutes that Stephen went down the side of the trail to put this piece of oak in a spot kind of where his dad was last seen. It was completely silent. And then the moment he walked back on the trail, wind, birds, all the sounds, and in a sudden whoosh, it kind of all came back, like something was being held back, and then it all of a sudden hit us. And it was one of the weirdest things that ever happened to me. You know, I don't consider myself a paranormalist or anything like that, but this was hard to deny. This was very, very in your face, very, very spooky.
Wow. What other kind of odd things have you encountered while filming?
So something else that happened to us is, you know, I did a few YouTube videos about a year ago, 2 years ago, before I started getting into film for my dad's YouTube page. And we went up to the spot where Jared Atadero's remains were found. Now, if you're watching the trailer while you're listening to this, Jared Atadero is played by the small actor, the young boy wearing the kind of tan jacket and the blue sweats. And so his remains were found in 2003, which was 4 years after he went missing. So my dad and I hiked up the side of this mountain. It was one of the hardest hikes we've ever done. And we were going to film on top of this mountain where Jared went missing. And my dad leans down, and right where, like, he sits down, there's a small Rubik's Cube, a child-sized Rubik's Cube, you know, like one of the mini ones, sitting there. And it was weather-worn, and it was silver and black. So fast forward to a week later when we did an initial interview with Alan Atadero. This was before the documentary was a real thing. And Alan pulls out a Raiders cap, which is black and silver. And he said this was Jared's favorite colors. And my dad goes over and pulls the Rubik's Cube off the shelf and shows him. And, you know, Alan was speechless. Now, that alone, okay, I can believe that. But then fast forward about a year later, we're on the trail. This was a month ago. And my videographer, Michael, is walking down the trail, filming over the side of this kind of rock embankment towards the water on the same trail where Jared went missing. And he finds a small pair of child sunglasses that are red and blue. They're Spider-Man. And he leans over to me and said, did Jared like Spider-Man? And I said, oh, I don't know. I think a lot of kids like Spider-Man. So we didn't think much of it. But then we go to interview Alan again a week later. And he's showing us picture. And he says, you know, Jared loves Spider-Man. And there's a picture of Jared wearing Spider-Man shoes. And again, it was just a weird thing that we went to the trail, found these things. Then a week later, we're interviewing Alan and these same things come up. And, you know, once I can understand, twice it's getting a little spooky.
Yeah, yeah. It's almost tricksterish.
Totally.
So do you guys think that there is a, let's say, an accepted explanation? Like, are we going to find an explanation that fits with our accepted view of how things are? Or are we looking at something that might be something we're not fully able to grasp yet?
I think that, you know, everyone I tell sort of has their own interest level in one area. Somebody writes to me and they're really into reptilians. Another person writes they're really into Bigfoot. Another writes and they're really into aliens. I like to think I'm a mile wide and an inch thick because I will read things about all kinds of different venues and ideas. And rather than concentrating on one topic, I think people need to start spreading their wings a little bit and looking into these other areas, because I think there's going to be parallels there. And whatever's happening here is a lot smarter than 99.9% of us, because it hasn't been figured out yet.
And, you know, so when I was in college, I majored in entrepreneurship, and we studied a lot on disruptive innovation. And you look at some of the brilliant businessmen of the last, you know, 30, 40 years, you have Steve Jobs, Elon Musk. And if these people thought the same way that everybody before them had thought, they would have never made these advances. You know, Steve Jobs came up with the iPod, iPhone, these kinds of things, Elon Musk, the electric car, these kinds of things. And a lot of people get stuck in this kind of single-minded way of thinking, right? And yeah, it's the job of us to kind of stir that pot a little bit and to kind of get you thinking. And if I had one suggestion for anybody, it would be don't find one way of thinking and stick with it. You know, treat life as an experiment and continue to think about new things and to try different ways to look at something and to get a different vision, because I don't know if there is one answer. I think that it's going to take multiple answers and multiple people getting their head around this thing to ever come close to some sort of consensus or answer.
That makes a lot of sense. And I do think there's probably multiple answers to what's going on. Even some of the cases that look similar to others might just be that way coincidentally, too. It might have very mundane explanations.
Mm-hmm. For sure.
Okay, so again, it's Missing 411, the movie. People can find you on Kickstarter just by searching for Missing 411. And it ends Sunday, August 16th at 9:30 a.m. Eastern.
Mm-hmm.
You need a little over 10,000 left to reach your goal.
That's right. And we realized that, you know, during the middle of campaigns, which were smack dab in the middle of ours, it kind of hits a lull. So we're asking people to kind of help us get over that hump. And then if we can, you know, reach our goal within the next 5-6 days, we can throw up stretch goals, and then once we throw up our stretch goals, we'll be able to offer everybody who's donated free rewards, and so that'll be really cool if we get to that point.
And you already have some excellent rewards there. Hypothetically, if assuming you get the funding and everything, when do you expect this to be done?
So we're expecting to have kind of a rough cut done probably December time. And then hopefully we'll get a final kind of cut that we're going to then give to or submit to film festivals a month or so later. And so we're looking about right around the new year time.
Okay. All right. And I highly recommend, if nothing else, people at least look at this. Look at the video. The quality, the work you put into this is fantastic. It looks beautiful. And it's such an important subject. This really needs to be made.
Thanks, Soraya. We really appreciate all your help on this thing.
All right. And even if people can't donate, they can share it and hope someone else sees it and donates as well.
Absolutely. And if you guys want more information, you can follow us on Twitter at Missing-411 The Movie or on Facebook, Instagram. We also have a website, which is missing-411.com. So any of those would work too.
All right. Anything else from you, David?
Other than even if we hit 100,000, that's not a guarantee, because every once in a while somebody will pull back, and it'd be ironic if we hit 101,000 and four or five people pulled out and we only ended up with 97,000. So it's important to push past that goal.
We need a sort of buffer, because I think it was 2 days ago, somebody who had made a $2,000 pledge backed out, and he sent us a message and telling us he was going to do it because, you know, he had some issues, and he said, I didn't want to do it right next to the time we were going to get close to our goal. And, you know, but like my dad said, you know, we need to have a little bit of a buffer in case a few people pull out at the last minute.
All right. Well, I thank you guys so much for spending some time with us to talk about this, and let's hope that everything works out and we'll be seeing this early next year.
Thanks a million, Soraya.
Thanks a lot, Soraya.
So there you have it. That was Ben and David Politis talking about their new documentary. And we'll have David back very soon, actually. Okay, I want to take you out with something we've never played here on this show before. This is a band called Sax Mile off their Iris Whitefly project. I believe it came out in 1996. This is a track called A G Lee C. It's in Cherokee, and it means My Grandma. And I think this is a fitting piece to end this conversation. Sax Mile.
It's my restlessness that brings me here again. Each time I'll come out a little farther. The family's used to it by now, I suppose. And Grandma stopped her teasing. Sure, when I was younger, with all that talk of the boogeyman, but who could blame a five-year-old with all the dried gourds and that creaky windmill? I guess it didn't do anything but make me want to come out and see for myself. It's just so looming. I've covered every square inch of this place at some point or another. Yeah, and over there behind that tree line is the Crawford's Pond. It's just that as that sun goes down behind those trees, it's like a change comes over everything. During harvest and into winter, each night I'll excuse myself from the table, throw on my jacket, and head out into the middle of this field. And with each step, I'll recall the things Grandma used to say to herself when she was working in the garden or maybe putting us kids to bed. Didn't make much sense at the time. she'd say, nine times will the cats play, and after that they'll have gone away. Bear the watcher and the sage. Dark as night when moon glow, come the smell of fall I know, mine the specter and the sage. Used to sound creepy, but now I know what you meant. And maybe now she knows the mystery. Looking round.